Wondery Plus subscribers can binge new seasons of American Scandal early and ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. From Wondery, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is American Scandal. Today we have a special interview about the media and its troubled relationship with artists and celebrities. Since the founding of the United States, the press has been a central pillar of our democracy. The freedom of the press is guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution, and the news media, called the Fourth Estate, is often said to be as important as the three branches of the federal government. But while the press is guided by idealistic principles, sometimes the media doesn't live up to its own high standards. News stories can gain steam not because they serve the public's interest, but because they're good for business. It's a problem that can be especially true in the case of celebrity news, and sometimes the consequences can be deadly. My guest today is Jake Brennan. He's the host of Disgraceland, a podcast about musicians who've had trouble with the law. Brennan also co-founded Double Elvis Productions, a company with a slate of podcasts about entertainment, crime, and American history. Brennan has spent a lot of time discussing the problematic relationship between celebrities and the media. It's a big part of the story about Britney Spears, the pop star who's currently the subject of a heated debate about mental health in the press. And in his new two-part series on Disgraceland, Brennan considers the media's problematic relationship with the notorious B.I.G., a legendary hip-hop artist who died tragically. In our conversation today, we'll discuss celebrities who've seen their lives unravel in the face of predatory coverage by the media. We'll also look at who ultimately bears responsibility for these meltdowns. Here's our conversation. American Scandal is sponsored by Audible. I get the thrill of, say, skydiving, but it's a lot of work and expense for something that lasts only minutes and comes with some safety concerns. Instead, I get my thrills in a lower dose, stretched out over hours with a good mystery. Like in the Penguin modern classic Perfume, The Story of a Murderer by Patrick Susskind. And as an Audible member, I can choose one title every month to keep forever from the entire catalog of classics, bestsellers, new releases, and Audible originals ready to listen whenever, wherever on the Audible app. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/AS or text AS to 500-500. That's audible.com/AS or text AS to 500-500. American Scandal is sponsored by True Green. This is a true story. Right now, fertilizer is spilled all over my garage, and the fertilizer spreader has lost a wheel. While I'm usually pretty DIY, some things I leave to professionals. True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to a beautiful lawn. You water and mow, they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. So you do you and let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed. Jake Brennan, welcome to American Scandal.
Stoked to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
Your podcast, Disgraceland, deals with musicians getting in trouble with the law, getting in trouble with drugs or alcohol, and getting in trouble with the press. And recently, there has been a growing conversation about how the media covers celebrities and the sometimes harmful effects these celebrities encounter. Of course, recently, that conversation has come to focus on Britney Spears, especially after the New York Times documentary Framing Britney Spears came out in February. Let's set the table a bit. For those people who haven't followed her career very closely, could you help us with the broad strokes of the story? How did Britney Spears get started, and what's happened to her more recently?
Sure, Britney Spears started as a child performer from the Deep South. She ends up on the Mickey Mouse Club, and that really becomes her breakout moment. That lasts for a couple years. After that, she heads to New York, sort of with her parents driving the sort of talent train, and she hooks up with a record label, and her career launches when she's still a teenager, and she explodes. The fame is massive. She becomes a multi-platinum selling artist fairly quickly. And of course, she then becomes a darling of the paparazzi. And it all kind of goes haywire from there. And I know we're going to get into the more specifics of it. But the documentary you've mentioned, it really gets into sort of the media's culpability regarding Britney Spears and all that has gone wrong with her since her fame, her explosion.
Well, sticking with Spears for a moment, she's currently under a state of conservatorship. That's a rare and kind of tortured legal status. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, sure. Conservatorship means that she has somebody appointed to her by the courts who makes all of her decisions for her that an adult normally would make. So everything regarding her life, particularly her finances. And right now, the person driving that is her father. And there's a lot of tension there. And the documentary has sort of shone a light on that tension and has forced the question to the public, you know, is this warranted? Does she actually need to be under conservatorship?
Now, this legal status is usually reserved for those persons who really cannot make decisions for themselves. So persons with Alzheimer's or other disabilities. How did Britney Spears, a celebrity and maybe a tortured one, but certainly an adult who has her own faculties with her, how did she become subject to this?
Well, as Britney's sort of at the top of her game as an artist, she's going through a very public meltdown. And of course, she has children, and she's seen as being somebody who can't basically parent in a way that normal parents would. And that's where the conservatorship comes into play. And frankly, you know, it's interesting because it's a very strange dynamic where, like you said, this is something that's reserved for people who don't have faculties, who can't make these decisions on their own. And it strikes me as somebody who watched the documentary and has read about this as being very odd that we're not really given the reasoning, what the justification for this. And there has to be something there. And that piece of it isn't getting discussed. The fact that Britney is a victim here, at least at face value, we have to take it like that. She appears to be somebody who does, you know, she's young, she's you know, approaching middle age. She seems like she's able to work. She's able to generate tremendous amounts of money still to this day. So why then can't she have control of it? And why then can't she make decisions as a normal adult would? And we don't know that answer.
Well, what went wrong for Britney Spears is certainly that question points to what went wrong in the media. Her very public breakdown was made public because of the media. What kinds of criticisms do you think are being made about how the media might be responsible
well, they're
for
good
what
criticisms.
Happened at all?
I mean, Britney Spears happens at a time when the sort of paparazzi industry is at its apex. It's huge. And Britney Spears' meltdown, I should say, happens. And at a certain point, they start fueling each other. And Britney's behavior, who knows exactly where that's coming from? She has her own demons. There's truly something there, like something underlying that is driving her to act in the way that she's acting. But you can also make the case that the intrusiveness of the paparazzi, the fact that they're following her everywhere, they're staking her out, they're not allowing her to live her life the way that any normal person would, even a normal celebrity, is driving her behavior in some ways as well. And then on the other side of this, you know, the paparazzi, it's a money-making industry. I mean, the press, the media is obviously they exist to make money. The nature of celebrity helps sell newspapers and magazines and generates internet clicks. And you can't ignore the fact that sitting right there next to the media is the general public who has a massive appetite for these stories. In this particular case, the flame-out story of Britney Spears.
Well, that's interesting because the flame out happened a while ago and she's been in conservatorship since 2008. So what happened that suddenly has this appetite for her story?
Well, sort of in the background for the last couple of years, there's been this ongoing support for Britney online, on Instagram, on Twitter, of her fans, basically. I mean, Britney Spears, let's not forget, she's an artist, regardless of what you think of the music she makes or, you know, what she does as a performer. She is an artist and she has a massive audience. And she's the type of artist who keeps drawing audience to her with future generations. And there has sprung up around Britney. It hasn't gone unnoticed that she's in conservatorship and she's not out there living her life the way that most artists and most adults are. So this groundswell of support has sort of happened organically, this sort of free Britney movement. Let Britney be Britney. Why don't we let Britney out of conservatorship? Why is she even in conservatorship? There's arguments being made that if she were a man, this would not be happening to her. As that groundswell is happening, earlier in 2021, the New York Times released this documentary, it's distributed through Hulu, on this exact situation. And once that happens, this whole thing comes to light and people start trying to lay blame or sort out the blame, I should say. And a lot of the people trying to figure this out are the same people who are writing stories about Britney Spears 10, 15 years ago when this is all popping off. So there's sort of like the documentary happens and we can't help but, as the American public, feel bad for Britney Spears. We can't help but wonder who's to blame. But at the same time, I think the media needs to look into the mirror. And I think we, as the media consuming public, need to look into the mirror as well.
It certainly wasn't the Free Britney movement alone that found this documentary and this story captivating. Britney herself seems to be in social media, kind of almost obliquely in secret code, talking to her fans. But more than that, why do you think her story is striking a nerve now, politically and culturally?
That's a really good question. I think there's an appetite right now for people who are being victimized. I think as a country, as a nation, we have a lot of empathy right now. I think somebody like Britney Spears, for all the power she had as a top-selling artist, seems particularly vulnerable. If you watch her on social media, she seems, to me, highly vulnerable. And I think people just see an injustice being done and they want it to be righted. And you also layer into this the fact that many, many people identify with Britney Spears, and we can't overlook the power of artistry and stardom and how it speaks to people and how it can actually motivate them.
Is this targeting of women in particular in gossip media and their sexuality and their relationships, is this an embedded misogyny in the media?
I would say so. In the case of Britney Spears, definitely so. I mean, we look at other young male child stars and actors who came up and they were not as sexualized as Britney Spears. I mean, Justin Timberlake wasn't treated the same way that Britney Spears was. And I think there is a sort of, it's this real lecherous kind of curiosity about young women, especially attractive women. And this is not new. This has been going on forever. I've recently wrote an episode for another show on Marilyn Monroe. And it's like, you know, these stories do not stop because of this appetite that I think is kind of lecherous in a lot of ways.
Well, you know, certainly, as you mentioned, Britney Spears is not the first woman to face this kind of coverage. But I wonder, you know, if you've been studying it in modern times and not so modern times, has the relationship between the media and celebrity always been so adversarial and exploitative?
Exploitative to various degrees, adversarial, not as much. It's definitely more high watt, glaring, and cutthroat now than it was. But right now, the media is like it's never been before. It's so big, it is massive. And when this thing is happening to Britney Spears, the breakdown, this is right around the time where the blogosphere is really growing, where social media is sort of like in its infancy and starting to explode, and media is starting to get bigger and faster. And with that comes more demand and more money to be made. So the timing of what happened to her was a unique time. And this is an interesting coincidence as well. When she was in the midst of her public breakdown, it was happening at the exact same time that Amy Winehouse was becoming a breakout star in America. So all the sort of ins and outs to all these celebrity TV programs that were showing Britney in these paparazzi shots were being soundtracked by Amy Winehouse's song, Rehab. And then we start to see what happened to Amy Winehouse a couple years later with her own sort of downfall and her own spat with the paparazzi. So it was a real interesting sort of coincidental loop there.
American Scandal is sponsored by the new masterpiece series, Mr. Bates versus the Post Office. Following one of the greatest miscarriages of justice in British legal history, the new masterpiece series, Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, is based on the shocking true story of the British Post Office scandal. When money started to seemingly disappear from local branches, the government-owned Post Office wrongly blamed their own managers for its apparent loss. And for more than a decade, hundreds were accused of theft and fraud. Many were even sent to prison, leaving lives, marriages, and reputations in ruins. But the issue was actually caused by errors in the Post Office's own computer system, something it denied for years. Don't miss Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, starring Toby Jones, beginning Sunday, April 7th on Masterpiece on PBS. The series will be available to stream on the PBS app, PBS Masterpiece Prime Video Channel, and PBS.org.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
When you mentioned Amy Winehouse, she had her own troubled relationship with the press. Tell me a little about her story.
Sure, Amy Winehouse. She kind of hits the scene with this incredible Mark Ronson-produced record right around the time that Britney Spears is having her meltdown. And this record is, it's hard for us in America to understand just how big this record was in the UK. It was massive. And as is the case with most of these musicians who end up falling under the harsh glare of the paparazzi, Amy Winehouse has serious underlying issues. She's, in addition to being an incredible artist and songwriter and singer and melodicist, just extremely talented, lauded by everyone from Tony Bennett to Mos Def. She's just incredible. But she's bulimic. She has trouble with depression. She's ill-equipped and too young to deal with the fame, the fault that comes down on her. And fame and celebrity in the UK is different than it is here. It's almost more intense, even though it's a smaller country in England, because it's so concentrated. And they treat pop stars differently over there than they do here for some reason. And she ends up having addiction problems, just to put it mildly. She's addicted to crack and she's an alcoholic. And she cannot deal. And she ultimately ends up joining, you know, one of the most notorious clubs of all time, and that's the 27 Club, and she ends up dying too young.
So Amy Winehouse's story is a bit more tragic than Britney Spears, but I'm wondering, in both, the media might be culpable. For Amy, how was it?
It's tough for me to say, being an American. The coverage over here, you know, it was exactly what you would think. It was the celebrity TV shows. It was, you know, the celebrity magazines. I think in London, like I mentioned earlier, it's a bit different. Celebrity culture over there is, like I said, a lot more intense. To the extent that they're more culpable than American journalists, comparatively to Britney Spears or whatever, it's tough to say. I mean, definitely culpable. You have to know, Amy Winehouse was living her addictions so loudly, so out in the open. I just can't imagine being a journalist and not understanding what I would be doing at the time, you know, as a member of the paparazzi or a member of a tabloid newspaper covering Amy Winehouse, and sort of, you know, similarly to Britney Spears, there's this sort of mutual back and forth that's going on with Amy Winehouse as she's sort of flaming out. She's driving the media, and the media is driving the flame out as well. So I think there's absolutely some culpability there, but I don't want to be here casting stones. When you're in the middle of these things as they're happening and as they're taking off, sometimes it's really tough to have perspective and understand exactly what's going on.
Well, you, like me, are often not in the middle of things. We're podcasters that look back and tell stories from history. But I'd love to hear a little bit of an origin story. So podcaster to podcaster, tell me how Disgraceland came to be.
Well, I was fascinated with podcasts, and this is about 4 years ago, and I started milling about, trying to figure out, you know, okay, I'm getting older, I'm going to need to figure out what I want to do with my life here sooner or later. And I knew I wanted to tell stories and start a podcast, and specifically tell music stories, because that's where I come from. I come from the music world. I grew up in a musical family, so did my wife. Both of our dads are in the music industry. So I grew up around a lot of these stories, or at least hearing them secondhand. And I knew I wanted to tell these sort of fascinating edge of your seat music stories. And I also knew I needed a hook to make it interesting and make it kind of cut through. And that's where I decided to combine my love of true crime with music. And once I kind of got that hook, I knew I had something there. And then Disgraceland was born.
Well, we're both podcasters. So let's investigate what our responsibility in that medium is. Because podcasting, it too might have some rules and is certainly a commercial enterprise for us, for instance. What do you think about the state of podcasting and its relationship with the truth, especially in true crime?
I think it's tough to generalize. I can speak from my experience as a podcaster who deals with true crime. And from the jump, from the get-go, from when I launched, I knew that my show was not going to be a journalistic show. It's just not. And I was outright and very open about that. I am not a journalist. I don't come from a journalist background. You know, I am telling a story in the same way that a filmmaker would tell a story about an actual living person or dead person who's a real person. And I'm dramatizing it in some cases, a true story, in the same way that a filmmaker would for film. It's just a different medium. I think there's a lot of great journalistic podcasts. I mean, that goes without saying. But I think for the industry right now, it's pretty wide open and the medium is still figuring itself out. We haven't really settled on, what are the sort of four types of storytelling we're going to have for the next 100 years. We haven't really, you know, look at film. I mean, I think The Godfather is the first truly great film. That doesn't happen until about 70 years into the history of the medium. And I think in podcasting, we haven't yet had the first truly great podcast. We're all just trying to figure it out. I'm trying to do it as authentically and honestly as I can. And I know a lot of others are, including yourself.
Well, let's talk about your podcast, Disgraceland in particular. You've looked at stories where the media may have been implicated in matters of life or death. One especially problematic case involved Tupac Shakur and the Notorious B.I.G. Remind us of their stories. Who were they and what happened to them?
Tupac Shakur and Notorious B.I.G., both hip-hop stars who came to prominence in the 1990s, they were really close friends. They were both very similar and also very different in a lot of ways, and they both respected each other because of their differences. Tupac Shakur was raised by Afeni Shakur, his mother, who was a Black Panther. The Notorious B.I.G. was raised by his mother, who was a Jamaican immigrant in Brooklyn. And, you know, Biggie, by comparison to Tupac, had more of a sort of, I don't want to call it middle class, but it was closer to middle class than it was straight working class, where Tupac Shakur was raised amongst actual revolutionaries. So they both had in them these different things that each respected. Tupac hits, his career takes off first. He and Biggie befriend each other. Like I said, there's sort of a mutual admiration society there. And then Tupac Shakur is going to a recording session that Biggie Smalls is at in Times Square, and he's robbed and shot 5 times, and he lives. This is at a time where he's on trial for sexual abuse of a young woman. He survives his wounds, and he implicates from an interview he does in jail that he thinks that the Notorious B.I.G. and Sean Puff Daddy Combs, who ran the label that Biggie Smalls was on, had something to do with his shooting. And it just sets off this rivalry that, you know, for the ages, that had disastrous results for both of them.
Well, this rivalry and the disastrous results, of course, both musicians were murdered. It might not have gone the way it did. Why did this rivalry get so much attention? And perhaps what was the media's role in fueling it?
Well, at the time, in the 90s, it was so much different. Hip-hop wasn't yet the dominant cultural musical force that it is now. Rock and roll wasn't completely pushed to the margins as it is now. So a lot of hip hop wasn't covered in the mainstream press unless it was negative. And you, you know, around this time, you start to see lots of articles about gangster rap being dangerous for kids, et cetera, et cetera. Conversely, there, you know, the magazines like The Source and Vibe magazine that covered hip hop didn't have the readerships that these, you know, that the Washington Post or Rolling Stone magazine had. But when they started covering this rivalry, their readership explodes. And they start almost, those two magazines in particular, Vibe magazine and The Source, start to have this sort of back and forth with write-ups about Biggie and Tupac, where both are, if not accusing or insinuating stories about the other, the sort of ante is being upped in these different ways. And it, I knew it when it was happening, and I was just a young kid. I could see it. And just knowing, you know, I loved gangster rap, and just knowing what was going on, I was like, this is going to end bad.
So there was, again, this tension in the media between journalism and profiteering that might have inflated the rivalry.
I think so, 100%. And the circumstances were very different because, like I said, hip-hop was being covered differently then than it is now. So the stakes were higher. And I think, you know, as is the case with Britney Spears and the media culpability there, there have been journalists who have come out who have said, you know, we probably could have handled this better. But at the time when, you know, when this is all happening, it's the same thing with Britney Spears. When you're caught up in the zeitgeist and it's being thrown at you daily, you almost don't even realize as a consumer that it's happening. And I can't imagine what it's like as a journalist in that situation where you're just trying to keep up with the story that is escalating rapidly. You know, a similar thing where, you know, it's not apples to apples, but what's going on with Kanye West right now? Like, would any of us be surprised if in 5 years there was a documentary lamenting the downfall of Kanye West in 2020, 2021? I think, no, not at all. But right now, we're not thinking along those terms.
You mentioned that at this time in the 90s, that rap does not have the ubiquitous cultural hegemony that it does now. And that probably means that it was seen as a much more urban, and that's code for black music. Mm-hmm. What do you think that did to the media coverage?
You know, this is actually this article by Malcolm Gladwell on Tupac Shakur and when he was writing for the Washington Post, and it's in the business section because that's where Gladwell wrote, and it couldn't get into the arts section or into the local section. So there was almost like they were ignoring these stories, the mainstream press was, like I said, unless it was negative coverage. And there was that famous New York Times Magazine cover with, I believe it's Tupac and Snoop and Suge Knight, and it's all about gangster rap. And, you know, it's for the artist, it's great because they're going to sell records. But, you know, the implication or just outright statement that this stuff is bad for your, you know, your suburban white kids. I mean, that was always there. That was baked into the cake of the mainstream coverage of hip hop. To what extent it had to do with race, you know, I'm not going to sit here and specifically cast stones, but this is America and race is always playing a role when it comes to popular music, and it has for most of the 20th century.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
You mentioned something interesting that gets me thinking about celebrity coverage, even when it's negative, because it's not just the media that has a financial interest in celebrity coverage. The celebrities themselves certainly have a significant interest in getting press, any press. They have publicists and media teams whose entire job is to get them coverage, even if that means doing something that leads to sensational headlines. But because when they're famous, they can make more money, how does that feed this loop?
It totally feeds it. And I think with somebody like Britney Spears, it's on record. Like, she had publicists calling paparazzi and alerting them to where Britney Spears is going to be so she could get coverage. So there's that. With somebody like Tupac Shakur, Tupac was a sort of a mastermind publicist in his own right. You know, I don't think Tupac actually believed Biggie Smalls had something to do with his shooting at Quad Studios. But I think inherently, instinctively, he knew that it was going to fuel the press and it was going to lead to record sales. And I think he chased that 100%. I believe that.
So there's a mutual benefit here in the media's coverage of the celebrities and the celebrities' growing fame from the media coverage. But where is the line of responsibility? Is there one?
Yeah, I do. I do think there is a line of responsibility for sure. Like I said, though, it's tough to say. I think as consumers, you know, I don't read Us Weekly. I never have. I've never read the tabloids. I don't buy the New York Post or the Boston Herald. I never have. So, you know, it just doesn't interest me. I don't do it out of any sort of moral obligation. But I do think there are things that are more interesting than celebrities spouting off at each other. But I think that I might be in the minority there. Now, this is coming from somebody who has a show called Disgraceland and writes about rock stars acting like feral narcissistic animals. So take everything I say with a grain of salt. I'm just trying to present it in a way that hasn't been presented before, in a way that interests me and excites me. And I'm looking for stories that are a little bit sort of off the grid and not as well known. But it's tough for me to sit here and cast judgment, even on members of the paparazzi who are, you know, working class guys and girls, and they're out there making a living. And like I said, they're caught up in the moment, in the zeitgeist of this. And it's a train that's moving. And I think it's hard for everybody involved at the moment to have perspective on what's happening.
Well, I think you're right. Every one of these groups involved is a human at, you know, at base. And they have instincts and motivations that they probably don't understand. But I wonder if I could get you to think about maybe some advice to the consuming public that they might think about when they do consume media that might be harmful.
My advice would be to know your history and to dig into the history of celebrity a little bit and see how this has, nothing is new. Everything has sort of happened in one way or another in the past before. Just the situation's changed and the circumstances have changed. And when you start to understand how things have unfolded in the past to people like Fatty Arbuckle or Marilyn Monroe or even Kurt Cobain, when these things pop up in the now, they become more identifiable as being detrimental and harmful, as opposed to just being this like sugar high that we're all getting off on. And there's real people there who are being hurt.
Well, Jake Brennan, thank you so much for taking time to speak with me today on American Scandal.
Thanks for having me. I really, really appreciate it.
That was my conversation with Jake Brennan, the host of the podcast Disgraceland. You can hear his new episodes about the Notorious B.I.G. beginning May 11th. Next on American Scandal. In the 1930s, the mental health industry was still in the dark ages. Mental asylums were crowded and filthy, and patients were treated like animals. But a doctor named Walter Freeman had a radical idea. He believed that a single procedure could revolutionize medicine, helping scores of Americans who were trapped in these asylums. Freeman was a pioneer of the lobotomy, and he became famous across America. But as he performed more and more of these procedures, he grew reckless. And as the damage piled up, he earned enemies who would do everything they could to stop him. From Wondery, this is episode 5 of 5 of Lance Armstrong from American Scandal. In our next series, in the 1930s, the mental health industry was still in the dark ages. Mental asylums were crowded and filthy, and patients were treated like animals. But a doctor named Walter Freeman had a radical idea. He was a pioneer of the lobotomy and became famous across America. But he grew reckless, and as the damage piled up, he earned enemies who would do anything to stop him. American Scandal is hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham, for Airship. Audio editing by Molly Bach. Music by Lindsey Graham. Our senior producer is Gabe Ribbon. Executive producers are Stephanie Jens, Jenny Lauer-Beckman, and Hernan Lopez for Wondery. Wondery.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.